check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina podcast. I am your host, Tommy Ashley. I'm joined by Greg Barnes, Gregory Hall, and Luke Buxton. That means it's on the beat. InsideCarolina.com's team of beat writers join me weekly here, and we've been doing these live. So if you're on YouTube, appreciate you joining us. Drop questions or comments in the chat box there. Gregory will get them to us. He'll read them out, and we'll get them answered for you. If you're listening to Apple Podcasts, rate us, review us, subscribe. Please do that. Also subscribe on YouTube. Leave us a rating, what you like, what you don't like, what we can do better. We will hear you. We will make changes. And finally, Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com sponsor them because they sponsor us. Help them. They need your help in these days. Spring football is coming up. You know, you can always get your football gear. Baseball's going on. You can always get the baseball swag. And, of course, NCAA tournament is here. That's why I get these band of brothers together. I want to go to Greg Barnes first. Greg, you know, with the COVID world and the bubble that is the NCAA tournament these days, Carolina got to Indianapolis, I guess, yesterday, which would be Monday. What is the process for the team for this week leading up to their game on Friday evening, as far as COVID goes?
Well, they've cleared actually both hurdles now that we're talking here on Tuesday night. The way it works is you've got to have 7 consecutive days without COVID issues, tests, before you can arrive in Indianapolis. That's one of the reasons that Virginia, for example, is not due in to Indianapolis until Friday. They play Saturday. I think they're in quarantine until Thursday.
In Charlottesville.
Correct. And then they can go to Indianapolis. And at that point, this is where it comes into play for all these teams. Carolina arrived on Monday. And once you arrive in Indianapolis, after those 7 consecutive days of negative tests, you have to test negative the first day you arrive in Indianapolis and then the second day. So you have to test back-to-back times on separate days. So Virginia, for example, they're not going to get there till Friday. We'll test Friday. Then they got to test again Saturday morning before their game. So a lot of apprehension for the Cavaliers. But Carolina got in Monday. They started working out today. We saw that on social media, which tells me that obviously they didn't have any issues. And, you know, for example, Wisconsin is ahead of schedule. And the reason that is because the Big Ten tournament was played at Lucas Oil Stadium. And so all the Big Ten teams that were playing in the NCAA tournament just remained in Indianapolis. So Wisconsin went through their quarantine Sunday and Monday. And when I say quarantine, I mean quarantine. When the teams arrived in Indianapolis, and this goes for Carolina as well, you go directly to your room, your individual room, and you stay there. And they bring food to your door and give you food that you can eat. That's how extreme this is. And so NCAA is calling this a controlled environment. It's not a true bubble like what the NBA tried to do this summer. They don't have the means for that. I think they said there's like 2,300 people that fall within the Tier 1 and Tier 2 listings when you have 68 teams involved. That's just too many people to try to bubble all at one time. But they feel pretty confident about how it's set up. And apparently, like, all these hotels where the teams are staying are completely blocked off. Like, nobody can get in. And if you happen to see North Carolina's social media post where they're lifting, there's a convention center where all these teams are staying. And within that convention center, they've set up a massive weight room so that once teams get through quarantine, they can actually go and get a lift in. And they've set up 12 different courts within the convention center so that teams can go in and get quick, easy workouts while they're working through all these processes. Wisconsin, for example, because they started the process on Sunday, they are actually going to be able on Wednesday night go up to Mackey Arena. And Mackey, of course, is in West Lafayette, which is about 70 miles northwest of Indianapolis, where Purdue plays, of course. That's where the game is Friday night. So because they're a little bit ahead of schedule, at least in terms of being ahead of schedule of North Carolina, Wisconsin's getting things rolling a little bit quicker. But we will finally get to talk to the Tar Heels on Wednesday. And so at that point, everything will be guns blazing, and North Carolina will be able to practice full speed and all those kinds of things leading up to the game on Friday night.
Yeah, I forget which player it was, player on another team, maybe one of the Big Ten guys, talking about, well, yeah, we're in our rooms and we can't leave. they knock and leave us food. And that's yeah, I think people really fail to understand what these players have gone through to get to this point.
Right. And Tommy, I think that's an important part. Walker Kessler had to go through two of these quarantines early in the year, both in the preseason. That's what he had to do. I mean, he was stuck in his hotel room for 14 days twice. It's not like he could go to and sit in the stands and watch his team practice. He was completely isolated for two 14-day periods, regardless of the kid's a basketball player or not. Could you imagine your kid being a freshman in college having to do that his first semester? I mean, that's brutal. That's really tough.
Yeah, and you know, they don't want to screw it up. Any of the teams don't want to screw it up now here that they're at the end of it. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see some raging parties after this NCAA tournament is over for these guys. I mean, I couldn't imagine. Luke Buxton, you think you could quarantine for 14 straight days to get it, to play a little basketball these days?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably not. But if my team's in the NCAA tournament, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I mean, that's a crazy thing, right? Like, you're having to balance not only focusing on your game, but also making sure that you don't get a virus that, if you somehow get it, could potentially screw your team over and other teams over as well. So the stakes are as high as they've ever been.
Gregory, I'll bring you into it. I mean, you know how college was like. You know how difficult it is to get acclimated to the college lifestyle. And like Greg said, Kessler had to do it, and now everybody is doing it. Who does it benefit? What teams does this benefit in your idea going into this tournament? Is it all equal these days since everybody's done it? Is it the older teams? We've talked about the experience. I mean, does it matter at this point as far as the COVID protocols and all that leading into this?
That's a tough one. I don't know if it gives anyone an edge over another person. I think the only thing, maybe, Greg, is this similar to like what they had to do in Asheville for that tournament, as far as like being a hotel room and getting food delivered? Do you know?
I don't think it was near that strict.
Because like that'd be the only thing with like the Maui tournament being moved to Asheville, and I think Bahamas was moved to what, South Dakota?
And they canceled it.
And then it didn't even happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think that would be the only way that like maybe give some teams some edge, but that was a long time ago regardless. And I mean, even with UNC, I mean, having fans back in the arena, they've kind of slowly gotten back to some sense of normalcy. So I don't know if it really benefits anybody as far as getting there and everyone's just kind of doing the same thing and having to deal with the same thing. So no, I don't really think it gives anyone an edge other than maybe veteran teams, just because guys who have been in the NCAA tournament before and understand what it takes to prepare. Yes, they haven't done it in this situation, but they can kind of keep younger people like, don't, like, we're here for a specific reason. This is what we're going to have to do. And so I think maybe teams that have veteran leaders that have been there before can maybe gives a slight edge, but even they haven't dealt with it, but they still know how to prepare. It can kind of draw all the negatives of like, man, we're really stuck here. This food sucks and all that stuff. So I think maybe only those types of teams.
That's interesting. I mean, it's a business trip for, I think, the older teams. I think the younger guys are still, you know, experiencing the tournament. Greg, let me ask you this before we move on from this topic. Suppose somebody gets infected. Somebody comes up during this tournament and has a positive test, whether it's Carolina or anybody. I know that they're forfeiting or they're calling it a no contest and their opponents advances, but what causes a team to do that? I know that you got to have five players. You don't even need coaches. But how do you, I mean, if a team's all together, for a practice and somebody tests positive, do they contact? I mean, how's it going to work? What are those guidelines?
That's a good question. Everybody's being tested every day. And I think when you look at, for example, the officials that all got booted, right? There were six of them. Roger Ayers was one of them. I think Teddy TV Valentine was one of them. They arrived, their rooms weren't ready. So the reporting goes, and they went out to get some food, and one of them got it. And so they're out. And so that's really what you're looking for is, okay, once you get them in this confined space, in this controlled environment, there's a designated team COVID specialist person, and whoever it may be, I mean, I'm not sure who UNC is, but basically they're in charge of all communications between the NCAA and the team of how things are going to be handled and what's taking place. NCAA will tell teams, hey, there's a negative test or there's a positive test here. This is the protocol moving forward. I do think one of the good things here is that the false positives, those will be handled on same day basis. So instead of teams having to wait, maybe wait a full day to address what could potentially be a false positive, they're allowing them to do those, I guess, multiple times a day to try to clear it up. Say, okay, well, this actually is a false positive. We can move forward. But in terms of the protocol, I mean, they're just going to be tested every day. And they provide a breakdown of, okay, here are the tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four. And I'm tier four because I'll be in Indianapolis, but I'm media. Fans will be tier four. I think family members will be tier four. And so basically, we're not supposed to have any contact whatsoever. Tier one is the team travel party. Team two is like administrators and some different things like that that may have potential interactions with tier one, but there's pretty clear language. That's not supposed to happen much, if at all. And then tier three is kind of in between. I think some NCAA staff and some variety of people that may have a fluke interaction with a tier two person. So they've got it listed out pretty clearly. But in, you know, how somebody would get it, you would just have to break protocol. That's the only way I know that you would be able to get it. We saw that in the NBA, of course. You know, a couple guys went out for food and got it, and that cost them some time. But they're pretty strict the way it's set up in Indianapolis right now. And they're hopeful that once everybody gets in past that, you know, deadline that was tonight, that everything should be moving forward pretty well.
So here's an interesting add-on. They're taking PCR tests, and the false positive rate is around 0.04%, which out of 3,200 tests is 1.28.
Yeah.
So let's say all of a sudden someone comes down with a false positive test. What's the protocol for that? Are they testing again, or is it automatic 7-14 day quarantine? I think that's where it gets really interesting. Is like you throw in all these different variables, and it's not like you get a second chance. It's you're done. Pack your bags. You're going home.
Right, and that's why they're doing that false positive setup for same day, and they specifically did it for that reason, because like you say, it is if you test positive, I mean, are you automatically done? Or are they going to give you opportunities that same day to retest to see, okay, all right, he actually is negative. This is just a false positive. So at least they're being proactive in taking that approach. I think that's very wise. Give somebody a couple of chances to make sure this is not just a fluke situation before you pull the plug.
It's like the Nick Saban Georgia game where he tested negative three times miraculously. I don't know who. Yeah. And Tuscaloosa administered that test. Maybe they just went a little side of the nose, but we'll see.
Saliva in a cup. You know, NCAA, North Carolina A&T lost their chance at their tournament because I think I heard they were false positives or whatever. Anyway, I would think that if you do what you're supposed to do, you stay in the bubble and don't do anything crazy, then teams, like Greg said, should be fine with this. Let's move on to this bracket. And Joey Powell called me out because I did not like that they stole you, Greg Barnes, for this Coast to Coast podcast on Sunday. They did not ask ahead of time if they could have my number one guest. No offense, Gregory and Luke, but it is what it is. But so you talked to plenty about this bracket. Now that we're locked in, and I don't remember you guys talking about it, let's go around the room, see who thinks what's the hardest region. We always do that every year. Greg, I'll start with you. Who got the short end of the stick as far as regions go?
I know a lot of people think the West is tough, and it is. I mean, there's some really good teams in the West. However, I think a lot of people think that, right? Am I?
What'd you say?
He said the West is the hardest. As soon as that was announced on Sunday, I was like, West is like by far the easiest.
Well, the West. Okay, we can debate it, but Gonzaga's in the West, and that's my champion, so I think that's the hardest. Go ahead, Greg.
I actually think the South is probably the toughest, just because I think Arkansas is really good. I think Ohio State is really good. Purdue, I know, has been a little bit hit or miss, and of course Villanova is missing Gillespie. But I think there's some really strong teams in the South. And, I mean, I think whoever wins Carolina's game Friday night is going to give Baylor a test in the second round. So I think the toughest teams are probably in that as a collective. I think at the high level, and we can get into this in a little bit, but I think there are some really good teams at the 1 and the 2 and the 3. That'll make this thing interesting. But once you get past that, I think we're going to see a lot of upsets. I think it's going to be a fun tournament. I just don't know if we're going to see any of the top line teams get messed with.
Yeah, I mean, you can throw 3 through 12 or 13 in a hat and shake it up, I think, for the most part. Yeah. I'm looking at these. I don't understand some of the seeds, and it's been hashed and rehashed. Like we've talked about, Wisconsin was a – their metrics are awfully high and they're 9. But bottom line is you got to win 6 anyway. Luke Buxton, toughest bracket.
You know, I'm kind of with the South, but I'll give the Midwest, and Ross team named it the, I think, Steak and Shake region, which I liked. I think it's interesting because you have a great Illinois team who seems to be one of the betting favorites outside of your top two. Baylor and Gonzaga seem to kind of be that third team everyone likes. But who I really like is kind of these the San Diego State's, I think, is a really good team. West Virginia's a really good team. And I love Georgia Tech. I think Georgia Tech got absolutely screwed with the 9 line. And I think they could provide a really interesting challenge to Illinois. I think Oklahoma State could go all the way to the Sweet 16 and provide another challenge to Illinois. I think West Virginia is good enough to provide a challenge to Illinois. So I think, like, you have a really good 1 seed, but then you have a lot of teams down the line who could eventually get to the Final Four out of that region. So I think that's kind of the one I'm looking forward to the most, seeing how it plays out. I think that's the upset bracket out of everything I've seen so far.
Gregory, I'll let you go in, even though you interrupted Greg to tell us that the West was the easiest.
I just had to, because I don't know if the West is – I mean, I'm just looking at it, and I'm between the South and the Midwest with the East number 3 and then the West and the 4th. Just – to Luke's point with the Midwest, I mean, if I'm Illinois, like I can't believe my 8-9 draw. I mean, you get Loyola Chicago and Georgia Tech, which are two very good defenses. And I think that 8-9 game might be tougher than the UNC Wisconsin one. Obviously Wisconsin, like you said, their metrics are extremely high, but I mean, just watching Georgia Tech play, I mean, they have veterans. They play tough defense. Jose Alvarado is one of the best in steals in the country, and just the way they play. And then you never really know with the Loyola Chicago team, because no one's really, I mean, I haven't watched them play, and I know their record's good and they come from a small conference, but I mean, Loyola Chicago, looking at metrics wise with Wisconsin, I mean, they're 9th in KenPom and they got the 8th seed. Wisconsin's 10th in KenPom and got the 9th seed, so then that's tough.
Cameron Krutwig, man.
True.
Only reason Loyola Chicago gets, what you call it, is Sister Jean or whatever her name is. I mean, that's a team that made its name on one tournament run.
They got two seniors that played a good bit in that tournament run still on this team.
Georgia Tech beats them.
I mean, teams haven't scored 60 points a game. No, I don't. I think it's going to be close. I mean, I have Georgia Tech winning that game. But then you got a 4 seed in Oklahoma State that with Cade star power, they could go, but then they could turn around and lose to Liberty in the first round because Liberty plays that Virginia type pack line. Tennessee, I don't know anything about Tennessee other than that they're in the SEC and they were good and they were highly ranked and then they kind of fell off, but then they're going up against an Oregon State team that's hot and just won the Pac-12 and is kind of playing like, all right, let's prove that we deserve to be here and kind of riding that high. And then Syracuse, like someone mentioned, if they get past San Diego State, it's hard to prepare for that zone in 2 days. So they could give West Virginia a run in the second round if they get through the first. It's just like, as far as looking through that bracket, I couldn't really be like, all right, yeah, they're going to go on, because then Houston, who's, I mean, Houston's one of the best offenses in the country as far as efficiency wise, and then a stout defense. They have to play Clemson in the second round, most likely, if Clemson can get past Rutgers, and that's another tough defense. So I don't know. I just think the Midwest is going to be a lot of fun and has a lot of teams that could wind up at the end. And it probably will be Illinois, just because, I don't know, going with chalk seems to have been the move recently, but you never know this year.
Here's what I don't understand. How does Georgia Tech end up with a 9 line and UNC ends up with an 8? Georgia Tech wins the head-to-head matchup. They finish higher in the ACC. They win the tournament. They have the player of the year. They've won 8 straight. Am I missing something here?
Let's
take a look at the net, shall we?
I mean, if we're going on the net and all those numbers, then this tournament looks completely different, right, Greg?
Yeah, and I think part of the issue here is Georgia Tech is behind North Carolina in the net. They had same number of Q1 wins, fewer Q2 wins. I agree. I mean, Georgia Tech was the best team in the ACC in the last month of the season. But I think you also have to kind of look at a lot of this in talking with some people that cover Wisconsin. They really felt that Wisconsin was probably – should have been slotted higher than a 9, but that when you start looking at the strength of the Big Ten, in that you have like a number 2 seed is Ohio State, number 2 seed is Iowa, number 1 seed is Michigan, number 1 seed is Illinois. In terms of that 7-10 range, you're very limited with where you can put some of these teams that deserve to get in. I mean, you don't want to put Wisconsin as a 7 and Ohio State your 2, right? That goes into this conversation. You don't want conference teams to have to play each other. And when a conference like the Big Ten has so many teams in, so many good teams in, you do have to get creative. And so I have to wonder if some of that kind of came into play with kind of where Georgia Tech's at, because while the Big Ten has a lot of teams at the top, the ACC has got a lot of teams kind of in that 7, 8, 9 range, right? With Syracuse and Clemson and Georgia Tech and North Carolina, Virginia Tech. So I think probably some of that played into it in terms of how they were trying to figure out where to slot people.
Well, to that point, which, yeah, it totally makes sense. But then you look at Gonzaga and who they put in their bracket. They put Iowa, who they beat by 11. They put Kansas, who they already played and beat by 12. They put Virginia, who they already beat by 23.
Yep.
Like, they're 2, 3, and 4 seeds they've already played. So, like, I saw that, and I didn't understand that at all.
I thought that was quirky.
It's like, put someone else in there. Make them work for it. And I was like, put in Ohio State. Put someone like that if you're going to – like, I just didn't – and especially this year where region doesn't matter. Like, I don't – I thought that was ridiculous. I mean, obviously, have Gonzaga winning at all, and I think that just kind of confirmed it, that they're at least going to make the Final Four easier than any of the other 1 seeds have it, as far as like that was my really like why the West I deemed easiest, because I look at it as a standpoint of how can the 1 seed move forward, and they have to beat teams that they've already annihilated this season. Granted, it was a while ago, but I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, the NCAA tournament always does it. Go ahead, Greg.
This is admittedly a stupid comment, but to Gregory's point there, region doesn't matter because everybody's in the same place. So I was hoping that maybe this would be the year that they would get creative and just have some hilarious like region names, right? I mean, just go stupid with it.
Like what?
The Mackey Arena region or something. NCAA, it is what it is. It's a money grab, right? And they're going to keep their brands and all that stuff. Let's look at it. I'll tell you an interesting matchup. So my son, one of his best friends, they're diehard West Virginia people. He is going to play golf at Morehead State of all places. First round, West Virginia versus Morehead State. That'll be an interesting battle. Who got screwed the most in the seeding? Not Carolina related, unless it is Carolina in your opinion, but Greg, I'll start with you again. Which team has the most beef after looking at this bracket for a couple of days on their seed line?
Oh gosh. That's a good one. Woo. Let me look long and hard here because I don't.
Well, while you're thinking about it, and I'll let you come back to it. Michigan State beat three number one seeds.
Yeah. And they were playing pretty good there late. I mean, that's one that would, you would think would kind of make sense. Because the like Oregon, are they a 7? I don't know. Is Florida a 7? Right? I mean, some of those are kind of questionable. But yet here you got UCLA and Michigan State playing in the first four. And the fact that what's his name, the Kentucky AD, who's the committee chair, Barnhart, is that right?
Yeah, I think that's his name. He kicked Louisville out.
Yeah, but the fact that he even commented that Michigan State UCLA is a heck of a way to open the tournament, and he said, "Oh, well, I'm saying it facetiously." I said, no, you weren't. Like, everybody knows you wanted a primetime matchup between two teams that are down a little bit, but they're big names, which is fine. Yeah. Just admit it, right? I mean, that's kind of my things. It's okay to acknowledge that some of these games are set up. I mean, you know, 2013, Kansas is number one, West North Carolina. Number 8 in Kansas's region in Missouri. I mean, but yeah, that was an accident. Come on. I mean, be honest about it.
Well, I wish they would have done it more since the regions are, you know, because, you know, I always look at it like when I look at it Carolina related, I want to see them play different teams, teams that they don't play often. I mean, they've played Wisconsin a bunch over the last few years. Gonzaga, like, to Gregory's point, they're playing the same teams potentially that they've played already this year. I like to see teams that would not normally match up, and I thought we'd see more of that, or hopefully would see more of that with Carolina's bracket than, you know, Carolina's opening round game than normal, since there were no region, there were no pods, nothing like that. Luke?
I was going to say, I love the Michigan State 11 line in terms of my bracket going to the upper echelon in terms of the ESPN rankings. I got Michigan State going to the Elite Eight.
Ooh.
We got January, February, Izzo. They go have a big win versus Illinois. They then beat Michigan. They're hot. They get screwed on a seed line. They get Texas probably. And then, like, UConn, Alabama, I think it's beatable teams. I think that region of the bracket where you have UCLA, Michigan, Texas, UConn, Alabama, that is exciting. That is what I'm paying attention to. My eyes are going to be glued to the TV for every single one of those games. But I think I'm making my money on that bracket. I think I got every single.
If I'm Bama, I'm upset. I mean, I know they're a 2 seed and they weren't going to be a 1 seed, and 2 seed's probably the best. But as far as, like, I mean, first of all, they have to get past Rick Pitino. I know that's good. Like, it's 15-2, but, like, I don't know. You still have to play against Rick Pitino.
Yeah.
And Iona, even though they might not be a good team, but, like, I don't know. There's still, like, potential. There's only happened 8 times, which is kind of crazy. I love whenever they put that out with, like, how many times the upsets have happened. I always feel like the 15 seed is one more, but they haven't. And I don't know. My brain always goes back to Middle Tennessee State beating Michigan State, but, like, I don't know. But then Texas is a very good team. I mean, Matt Coleman, look what he just did in the championship game. So yeah, I like that. I like that part too. Down there.
And that's the thing with teams like Alabama, and this kind of goes for Baylor a little bit too, is that because Bama shoots almost half of their shots are from behind the arc, which is crazy. And they're not the best shooting. I mean, they're, like, you know, maybe right around 100 nationally in 3-point field goal percentage. And so when you're talking about a team like that, that's so reliant on the 3-ball, they just have to have an off night. And, you know, if you get going and you start making them, we saw what happened, you know, with Auburn and Carolina a couple of years ago. But it can go the other way too. And so I do think they're in a situation where if they catch somebody on a good night and they're not making threes, they're very susceptible to an upset early.
Yeah, let me take a break here because I got a comment about that, and it's relevant to Carolina's future, given who they might play in the second round. But let's talk about Johnny T-Shirt, johnnyt-shirt.com. Of course, they're great sponsors of this podcast, great friends of Inside Carolina, and therefore great friends of you, the Inside Carolina subscriber. If you're not a subscriber, you need to do it. 10% off all your Johnny T-Shirt orders, baseball gear, football gear, tailgating gear, home gating gear. You know, they've got everything. There's probably some things around this man cave that came from Johnny T-Shirt. In fact, I know there are. And they sent it right to my house. I didn't even have to go see them. So take your time right now during this podcast, while these national ads are playing, order something from Johnny T-Shirt. Use that IC code and get 10% off. Take another short break. Let the national guys pay the bills. We'll be right back with On the Beat Live. Gregory Hall, Luke Buxton, and Greg Barnes. I'm Tommy Ashley. We'll be right back.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back on The Beat Live, InsideCarolina.com podcast. Greg Barnes, Gregory Hall, Luke Buxton. Greg, to your point right before the break, you were talking about teams that can get hot or cold, and it changes the game. So what I do, and I want to get y'all's advice on how to pick these brackets, I look for teams that can win even if they don't shoot it well.
Yep.
And I think Carolina's one of those if they don't turn it over so much. But who are the other big names, Greg, in your opinion, that can win ball games if they do not shoot it well? I'm not sure Alabama's one of them. I think Baylor might be. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, yeah, both those teams are good defensively, which kind of helps, and that's one thing you look for. But Alabama's just so reliant on that three ball. I mean, it's 47% of their shots are three-pointers. Which is crazy.
That's asking for an early upset.
It is. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Iowa's kind of that way. When North Carolina played Iowa, I think Iowa made 17 threes. And they were lights out. But yet Carolina hung around, and it wasn't, you know, a blowout by any stretch, even though Iowa was on the fire. And that's because they're not very strong defensively. So if the shots aren't falling for a team like Iowa, then they're susceptible. So really you're looking for teams that are very – very good defensively, or that can rebound. And I know a lot of people kind of look down on a team like Houston because they're in the American, and you know, the resume is not that strong. But I mean, they're number one in the country in effective field goal percentage defense. And yes, they're not in a major conference. They're really good defensively. And they take a ton of threes and they shoot a pretty good percentage from there. But I think even if they're having a little bit of an off night, I like them better than I like an Alabama. And then, of course, Gonzaga, I don't think is the best defensive team. But I think they can afford to have an off-night shooting because they're so good. Their off-night is still better than most teams' good night. And so that's the team I think is just so far and away better than a lot of these other ones that even if they play their B game, they're going to win most of these games, at least get to the Final Four.
Luke Buxton, give me a dark horse out of each region. Nah, don't do that because that's too much work. Give me a dark horse. You got Michigan State going to the Elite Eight, which is a – I'm not sure that's a terrible pick. I'm not sure I'd do it, but give me somebody. Is that your team? Is that the one you're going to ride to the top of the bracket challenge?
So I got two big upsets. It's Michigan State, and again, I'm still on Sweet 16 Elite Eight line. I'm looking at the Alabama-Michigan State Sweet 16 matchup, and I'm going back and forth. So they're one. I mentioned earlier, Georgia Tech is two. Georgia Tech is a bunch of dogs. Dogs win tournament games. DeVoe, Moses Wright, Alvarado, Usher. Those guys play, and I love it. I think they're a great style. I think they're a great disruptor in the NCAA. I have them beating Illinois. And then my last one is Texas Tech. I think Texas Tech has the potential to beat Arkansas and then knock off Ohio State. That one's still up for debate between – that Elite Eight matchup. But I think if in those three regions, you have those teams and Gonzaga's going through, you know, no question about it, I'd put my house on it. They're getting to the Final Four.
Gregory Hall, go ahead, man.
The winner of the Georgetown-UNCG game, I think will give Michigan a extremely tough matchup. And that's me picking Georgetown over Colorado and UNCG over Florida State. I'm excited for that UNCG FSU game just because FSU, I mean, they're a turnover machine right now. I think they kind of got, I wasn't expecting them to get a four seed. I know they beat Carolina and got to the ACC tournament game, but they only had to win one game based on their buys to get there. But I don't know. I was watching UNCG play in the SoCon and I love Isaiah Miller. I mean, that kid can play. And so I also like LSU. In that too, just because, I mean, LSU gave Bama a run for their money. And that kind of, I think, gave them some confidence to go in. If they can get past St. Bonaventure and take on Michigan, I think that's another team that could go pretty far. And then, like Luke said, I love Texas Tech. Mack McClung, another star power. He can ball. And you need that veteran leadership that can kind of take over a game, and guard plays as important, like we know it is. I don't really have a dark horse in the West. If I had to pick one, it would probably be USC with Evan Mobley. I mean, he's good, but I don't know if they can get past Iowa. And then probably Oklahoma State with Cade Cunningham, either them or San Diego State, just because their defense is really good and can force teams to struggle, kind of like UVA when they get hot and things like that. So, yeah.
Did you just yawn right during our podcast?
No, I had like a multi stutter and I was trying to focus and I looked up. It was a not my finest moment. Thanks for pointing that out.
That's a quality move there. One thing I want to point out is we've touched on this a little bit, but I want to expand on it. When you look at kind of the top three seeds of each of these regions, I think they're all pretty good teams. But when you start looking at the fours and the fives, I think there's a ton of potential for a lot of upsets there. I mean, I already mentioned, you know, Gillespie's out for Villanova. Fulkerson's out for Tennessee. Purdue's been a little bit hit or miss down the stretch. I think Creighton lost three of their last six. Virginia, as we've talked about, not even getting to Indianapolis until Friday. They've been in quarantine all week long. Who else we've got? Florida State. I mean, Colorado, I don't think is that good. Florida State. I mean, I love them. And I think they have the potential to get to the Final Four. But to Gregory's point, I mean, they have been a disaster taking care of the ball for several weeks now.
But they are dogs, too.
They are.
Georgia Tech, those guys, Florida State will get after UNCG like nobody has all year.
Right. And that's why I've actually got them in the Elite Eight. But that's that. I fully am aware that they could easily lose the UNCG if they turn it over 20 times. So a lot of those teams are kind of enigmas, or at least they've got some injuries that kind of make them a shell of what they once were. So I think the fours and the fives, those are going to be the games to watch out for, especially first 2 days.
All right, last question before we talk Carolina, Wisconsin, and Carolina specifically. Gregory, I'll go back to you first. Biggest upset in the tournament, one game. Give me one. Let's go biggest upset in the first round.
Biggest upset in the first round?
Yep.
Probably – UNCG, 13-4. I don't think it gets – I don't see any – or either that or Ohio over UVA. I don't know. I just watching the ACC all season, I do not trust the ACC at all. Like, I saw a stat that they haven't had a losing record as a team league in forever. And, like, potentially – it won't happen, but potentially – I could see all seven teams losing in the first round. Like, I see that. I could, like, just looking at the matchups. So I don't trust the ACC at all. I think that I don't really have any bigger upsets than that, other than maybe Oregon State over Tennessee, Georgetown over Colorado. To Greg's point with the four and fives, I think all the four and fives are susceptible outside of maybe Oklahoma State, in my opinion.
And the thing people don't realize with Oklahoma State is if Cade Cunningham wasn't on that team, they're still good.
Oh no, yeah. Like, it's kind of like when with Illinois with Dasunmu, when he went out, like, they still went 3-1.
Yep.
It's those teams that have the star power, but then if their star power goes away, they can still win ball games. And to your point, Oklahoma State's definitely one of those teams.
Luke Buxton, biggest upset. You were not feeling Gregory Hall's Florida State upset.
They're not losing.
I don't think you understand what Isaiah Miller brings to the floor. Have you watched him?
They're not losing.
He's 6 feet tall, and laying the ball up is not an option. He goes up for blood every time. It's awesome. I love watching.
Give me international 7-footers. Give me MJ Walker. Give me Scotty Barnes any day of the week. They're not losing. I would say the biggest one, I got a 12-5 to Dogs, my Georgia Tech team. Come on now. Like, it all makes sense. Give me my favorite show growing up was Psych. It took place in Santa Barbara. I'm taking Santa Barbara over Creighton. Awful loss to Georgetown in their conference championship. Santa Barbara has three players, scored double digits, team full of upperclassmen, finished 15-3 in the Big West. I think it's every year 12-5 upset happens. You look across the board, maybe Villanova. I don't think Villanova is that great, but I think Santa Barbara is the 12-5 pick of the tournament.
It was interesting watching when they were showing all those different upset games, like, you know, the 5-12s and the, you know, all that stuff. It's not, it doesn't happen as much as you think, but it seems like it happens every year. Greg Barnes, biggest upset in tournament.
Yeah, you know, the 12-5 is the funny thing. I've actually got 3-12s beating 5s, but I actually don't have the one that Luke just pointed out. I've got Creighton winning over Santa Barbara, mainly because Santa Barbara, they are good and they're veteran. They don't take many threes. And I really feel like for some of these lesser teams to score some upsets, you've got to jack up a bunch of threes and make them. I think that's kind of the formula in recent years. But, yeah, I mean, without Gillespie, I think Villanova is a shell of what they were. Winthrop, I don't know that they're great, but I think if they get some shots to fall, they can win there. Who else? Like Oregon State, you play pretty good. Fulkerson's not playing for Tennessee. I think that's a pretty easy one to pick. And then Georgetown looked really good in the Big East tournament. I'm not impressed with Colorado, so that's one that I had. So that's 3-12s. I've got a couple. I think I got 1-11, 1-10 winning, 2-10s winning. So I think there's going to be some fun days, some good games to watch first 2 days.
What 10s do you have winning?
Which 10s do I have? Let's see. I got Maryland winning, and I've got Virginia Tech winning.
Okay. I only have Virginia Tech.
Most vulnerable or first number one seed to lose?
Michigan.
Luke. Michigan. It could be LSU. The way they played in the SEC final against Alabama, they look fantastic. It could be Florida State.
UNCG.
It could be Georgetown. It could be UNCG. It could be Michigan State.
UNCG so many options. Would be awesome. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Give me Wes Miller all day, except for against Florida State.
Give you Wes Miller all day, but Florida State's winning.
Well, so I got a question, Luke, or no, Gregory. Wes Miller makes a run to the Sweet 16. Does he cement his role in replacing Roy whenever Roy decides to hang it up?
Let me pull up this. Somebody tweeted something.
If you're not on YouTube watching this, you're missing some reactions.
Where is it? I'm trying to find this tweet that someone put out about the path for Wes Miller to wind up at UNC. It involves going to Baylor.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to Baylor if my life depended on it. No disrespect. Baylor's good, and Carolina may find out that in a few days, but I wouldn't go to Baylor if I were him.
But yeah, no, I don't know. It's just, I mean, to like Roy said, he's got a contract through 2028. So,
yeah, he's not going anywhere.
I think Wes needs to go to a bigger job and have success.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
What I mean,
well, who's your Tommy? You didn't answer. Who do you think your biggest upset is?
I mean, I kind of like Colgate to beat Arkansas.
That game's going to be a lot of fun.
Just because it's going to be a high possession game and all that. My thing is, when I look at this, and I have not yet picked my bracket, is like I said earlier, I look for teams that can win in dogfights. You know, and I look for teams that have key injuries. That's one thing I don't understand. I thought Alabama was going to steal the number one seed from Michigan just because of Livers. If Livers is out, you know, that's a completely different team. He killed Carolina in the Bahamas last year, and he's done it when he's healthy.
Well, and they rely on Hunter Dickinson down low, but he can completely disappear. I mean, Illinois beat them by, 22 without Dosunmu? So, yeah, I don't trust Michigan at all.
There's a reason I had two teams versus the field, though. And the disappointment comes that one of those two teams is playing against North Carolina. That being said, let's talk about Carolina's first-round game, Greg. You mentioned talking to some Wisconsin people. You know, everybody talks about Wisconsin is in the Big Ten. This is a tough tournament, a tough league. The Big Ten this year probably as good as the ACC in what? 95? Is that when the ACC was ridiculously good? They had Maryland and Wake Forest with Tim Duncan and all those teams. At any rate, Wisconsin didn't beat any of those teams. They went 0 for whatever against the top level of the Big Ten. So what's Carolina need to do besides the obvious, don't turn it over? I mean, how does Carolina win this game against a Big Ten team that everybody, you know, says plays Big Ten basketball, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, Wisconsin, kind of their key to success. They're not a great shooting team, but they're a pretty good three-point shooting team. And they don't turn the ball over. And when you do those things and you control tempo, that sets in motion some issues for North Carolina. Wisconsin takes a similar approach to Tony Bennett in that when a shot goes up, one of the reasons they're not a good offensive rebounding team is they send a couple guys back. And that eliminates any kind of transition. And so where North Carolina has to have success, and they've done this pretty well the last couple of weeks, is to get into the passing lanes and be able to create some live ball turnovers. If North Carolina can do that, I think they win this game. If Wisconsin is very careful with the ball and they don't commit any turnovers and they're able to get some good looks and knock down some shots, it's going to be a long day for Carolina. But I think the fact that even though Wisconsin has some big guys, Micah Potter. He's a kid who likes to kind of leak out and be a perimeter shooter, which can be an issue, but he's kind of a stretch four type player. Against North Carolina, if Carolina is able to pound the ball inside, that's tough to defend. And so I think if Carolina, to your point, Tom, we've said this all year long, but it's the truth. If they don't turn the ball over, if they pound the ball inside, if Armando Bacot shows up, and if Kerwin Walton hits a couple threes, I don't see Wisconsin being able to win this game.
I agree with that. And it sounds simple enough.
Yeah,
Carolina.
Right.
Just don't give it away. And the good thing about Wisconsin is they're not going to force you. If you're giving it away against a team like Wisconsin, you are just giving it away. Because they're not going to be that team that takes it. Now, the second round matchup is going to be a different animal. Let's talk about Anthony Harris, since Gregory brought him up in the Slack. And Dewey Burke talked about him a fair amount on the post-game podcast the other night, and then he also in his mailbag that Ross Martin puts together on InsideCarolina.com. I think Harris is definitely a key. My question is, how much did he learn from his mistake against Florida State? But your thoughts on him really assuming the, for lack of a better way of putting it, the Andrew Playtech minutes for this team.
Yeah, and with Anthony Harris and what I kind of have seen Roy using him as recently is he is kind of coming in when he's noticeably frustrated, Roy, that is, with Caleb or RJ's defense, or Leakey's for that matter. He kind of slots Anthony Harris in to try to come in and be that defensive spark. And even against Florida State, I mean, he was trying to be the guy to take shots and be aggressive. And so I don't know. I don't see him getting more than 10, 12 minutes a game, but he can be the guy that can kind of settle everything down, especially in the Wisconsin game, because Wisconsin wants to play slow. And so the team that's going to dictate the pace will win the game. And so if Wisconsin comes out and UNC lets the tempo be slow early, that could lead to Caleb turning the ball over some and get frustrated. And then if he doesn't make up on the defensive end, which is kind of what we've seen out of Caleb, right? When he's turning the ball over, he can come back and make some good defensive plays. And there's even the other way. If his shots are falling, he might not get back on defense. If he does that, either of the two scenarios, I could see RJ taking over at the point because he's really elevated his game recently. And that's when Anthony Harris could step in and be like, all right, I'm going to get some stops defensively and kind of settle things down. That's what I see his role being.
You got to end every possession in a shot. And I heard y'all talk about it on Coast to Coast, Greg, and I've been saying it all year with the way this team is. Luke, Carolina's key. Which backcourt guy is going to be key for North Carolina? Pick one against Wisconsin.
Yeah, I would say Caleb for two reasons. One, it's can he limit Demetri Trice, right? He's their best player. He's their point guard, their scorer. Can he, one, limit his three-point shot, but also just ability to dish the ball and make things happen? I think his on-ball defense is going to be number one priority. I think two is, can he hold on to the ball? Can he run the offense? Can he limit turnovers? And three is, can you knock down the occasional outside shot? If UNC can, you know, I think what Greg said is right. Like, death taxes, UNC is going to rebound the ball and score inside. I think that's a given. It's going to be, can Wisconsin, you know, hit shots, and can Carolina hit shots from outside? And if you can, you know, it doesn't have to be a total swing, and UNC doesn't have to shoot 40%. Wisconsin doesn't have to shoot 33%. If Carolina can just kind of hit around that 36 and limit Wisconsin to what they're doing, which is around like 36, 37, I think Carolina wins this game easily. But if they can't handle those guards and they're able, as you mentioned, they got four guys who can shoot from outside. If they're all hitting and Carolina can't limit that, it's done. So I think it all starts with Caleb's defense on Trice, and which is also interesting what Gregory mentioned with Anthony Harris. Can he come in if we can play – or if UNC can play really tough on-ball defense on Trice, Caleb, and circle RJ, and also play tech, and also Anthony, and make it really difficult on him, they have the personnel and the depth to do it. So I think it's all about execution at that point.
You're muted.
It'll be up to Armando Bacot. I know you asked about backcourt, but it's just the impact that he has kind of down low about, like, because I'm looking at who Wisconsin goes to usage rate wise. And Micah Potter, their starting center, is at the top of that with taking nearly 30% of available shots when he's on the floor. And then second is Nate Ruivers, or Ruivers, however you pronounce his name, which is the backup center. So if Armando and Dayron and Garrison and Walker, but really Armando, can kind of set the dictate, look, I'm going to go at you and get them in foul trouble, then that's going to, I think, kind of be like Wisconsin's like, crap, this is the one thing we didn't need to let happen was foul trouble. So I think that's going to also play a huge role. And then the other end, as always, UNT can't miss 15 free throws. So.
Yeah. All right. I clicked the mute button, so I apologize for that. I think I need to caution, while we all think, well, it seems like we all think Carolina's going to win this game. Wisconsin, while they didn't win the games against the big teams in the Big Ten, they had some pretty close games. And if you look just the last couple weeks, they lost to Illinois by 5. And Illinois, for me, has taken over the role as the second best team in the country behind Gonzaga. Lost to Illinois by 5. Lost at Purdue by 4. Lost at Iowa by 4. And then lost to Iowa in the Big Ten tournament by 5. So even though they've lost those games, they've been very competitive against some of the best teams in the country. And I think there's value in that. Yes, you know, if you're a Wisconsin fan, you would love for them to be able to win a couple of those games. We had those conversations about Carolina, right? I mean, if you look at what Carolina has done against the NCAA tournament teams, they've got a win over a 4 seed. And then the next best win is what? A win over a 10 seed?
10 seed and then 11. And those are the only 3.
That's right. So – yes, that's, I think Carolina, wild. Right. I think Carolina wins this game, but Carolina's going to have to play well, and they're going to need some breaks go their way with Wisconsin. This is really just looking at it on paper in terms of matchups. Carolina has an advantage, which is why I have them winning this game, but this is not going to be an easy task for them.
I love how the only common opponent is Louisville, and both teams beat them by 30.
Yeah. Well, they beat the doors off of them. I mean, yeah, Wisconsin's. So
but you know what that is. Louisville was coming off pauses in both of those games. Yeah. 18 days before Wisconsin, 19 days before Carolina.
I mean, just like UNC, Wisconsin's biggest win, highest seed, is over Loyola Chicago early in the season. And then they beat Rutgers and Maryland, who are what? They're both 10 seeds, right?
Yeah.
So, but to your point, I mean, yeah, being competitive in those games is huge, but eventually just losing to all those big games wears down on you. And subconsciously be like, man, we just can't get over the hump against in big games. But then that's where veteran leadership comes in, and they have that being what I think they're like the 20th oldest team by like average year.
So let's talk about that, because yes, they have experience, and I think Baylor's kind of in the same boat, but there wasn't an NCAA tournament last year. So how much does that factor in when, you know, it's not like these guys all played together last year in the NCAA tournament. Nobody did. And so does that take away some of the value of that experience, considering this is the first tournament in 2 years, or am I making too big of a deal about that?
No, I think it's valid. I think my question is, how valuable is actual NCAA tournament experience versus being in the dogfights that they've been in?
Right.
I mean, they've been in the wars nonstop this year in the Big Ten. Where do you weigh that versus that NCAA experience? You know, you give me old guys every day of the week in the NCAA tournament, but they got old because they played 4 years of regular basketball as well. So that's what gives me pause. Carolina's size is going to be an issue, but they've gone against size. They've had to battle against Luka Garza, you know, three times this year or whatever. They've had to go against that stuff. I think Wisconsin's like the old grizzled battle tested veteran that gets in the boxing ring, right? And you got the guy you think is going to come in and overwhelm you, and then they end up throwing up some old sneaky tricks and wearing you out. I don't know. I don't like the matchup for North Carolina.
Tommy, I would disagree with you on the take in that I think these close losses, I mean, they lost, what, last 9 of 14, 6 of 8. I think that wears you down. I remember UNC last season. They were putting up fights against good teams. And you go in the locker room, and I remember Cole one time being like, I don't know what we do. I don't know where we go. I don't know how we win these games. And I think that kind of showed throughout the season. It was they didn't know how to win those close games. I get they're against a lot better teams in North Carolina. But I think where North Carolina finished the season versus where Wisconsin finished the season matters. I think that swings in the Tar Heel favor.
So the headspace, matters most to you.
Yes, I think Wisconsin will help that they've played better teams. I think the idea of playing better teams prepares you better off than how, you know, North Carolina's strength schedule. But I do think the way teams end the season, and I'd love to see statistics because I don't know the actual facts, but just in my opinion, I think that matters.
Lou, you brought up Louisville being the common opponent, but both teams lost to Marquette also, by the way. I just pointed that. I just saw that. Tommy, to your point about NCAA tournament experience, I mean, I'm looking at Wisconsin's last games. In 18-19, they were a 5 seed, and they lost to Oregon in the first round. In 17-18, they didn't make the tournament. In 16-17, which is probably the last, like for the seniors, was kind of the last win they had, they made the Sweet 16 for the fourth straight year. But since then, lost, didn't make the tournament, didn't have a tournament. So, I mean, UNC is not much better, but...
So tournament experience a wash.
Yeah, exactly, for both teams.
But you've got, you know, 22, 23-year-old guys. Anyway, I don't like the matchup for North Carolina. And then the second-round matchup, yeah, we won't talk about that one yet. Yeah, the issue with Baylor is for them
41.8% shooting from three.
Yeah, and you got 6 of them that can do it.
Jared Butler, Macy O'Teague.
Scott Drew is 2-6 for single-digit seeds with a margin defeat of 13.2 points per game.
Oh, that's a stat.
That's a heck of a stat. I wonder, you know.
How many times have they been like a 2 or 3 seed in those situations?
Stats.
Yeah, really.
Question the stats, right? He pulled it out, okay? Don't psychoanalyze.
At the Wisconsin press conference today, it was funny. Somebody asked Greg Gard about, you're always 29-0 in the first round. What do you think that is? And he's like, he's had a lot of good teams. Like, you know, when you're a 1 seed or a 2 seed, most of the time, you're going to win a lot of those games.
Yeah. How many times has Roy been an 8 or a 9 in those games?
Well, the last time he was what? Villanova?
2013.
Wins Villanova and then puts up the great first half performance versus Kansas and then falls apart.
So it's been 6 a couple times and has been never been a 7 and then was the 8.
He's never been below a 9 as like a head coach ever, right?
Yeah, he was. I'm trying to think. Was he a 9 at Kansas? I know he was at least an 8.
I think he was a nine once at Kansas, but he's never been 10 or lower. And this was like the 1 year that was a possibility. But then they obviously have played well down the stretch to earn their 8.
Yeah, it's an interesting matchup. You know, like I said, Carolina, and I think we've hit on it on this show, and I hope our listeners realize Carolina's going to have to play well. You know, it's not going to be a walkover. If they come out and they play bad, they are going to be done in an NCAA tournament at about 9:15 on Friday night. Last question for you guys. Final Four. Gregory, go.
I have Gonzaga. I have Texas. I have Illinois. And I have Baylor.
Damn, son, we're like kindred spirits. That's mine. I'll go ahead and
free all four of them.
Yep.
Let's go, Tommy. Come on.
Well, you know, if Michigan
was healthy,
if Michigan was healthy, I'd go chalk for the first time and win.
2008.
Yep. So, Luke, Final Four.
Gonzaga, Florida State, Baylor, Oklahoma State.
Interesting. We need to write these down. Somebody write these down. Greg, what you got?
Yeah, to your point, Tommy, like 3 weeks ago, I had all chalk. And because of some of the issues that the Michigan's had, I've had to remove them from the mix. But actually, I'm kind of digging the Big Ten this year. So I've got Gonzaga, Ohio State, Illinois, and I'm having a hard time between Florida State and Texas. So I'll say Texas just to make Sherrill happy because I think he's a big Texas fan this time of year. But I got Gonzaga beating Illinois for the title. Congratulations, Mark Few.
I mean, that dude, you know.
He deserves it.
Absolutely. So you got Ohio State beating Baylor or beating Carolina in the Elite Eight, Greg?
I've got Ohio State beating Baylor.
It's going to be a wild tournament, but I think ultimately it's going to be who we expected in the end. So we'll see what happens when they get there, assuming if they get there. I think they will, though, as we discussed. The COVID protocols are solid. If you screw it up, it's your own fault. If you're a team that gets an uncontested out of the NCAA tournament, look in the mirror, not at anybody else. It's been On the Beat podcast. Tommy Ashley, Greg Barnes, Gregory Hall, Luke Buxton. We've been live on YouTube as well. Appreciate you joining us. If you didn't listen to us live, hope you're enjoying the podcast. We'll be back again soon. Thanks, boys.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.